This is Phil Farron, and I am driving around Eureka Springs. I'm on vacation this week, and we're down in Eureka Springs enjoying a little vacation kind of roundabout. Day before yesterday, Christmas, we actually drove down to Bentonville, Arkansas, which is the home of Walmart. We joke that at some point, if you expect to make it into Walmart heaven, that you really have to make the pilgrimage to Bentonville, Arkansas. And there's actually three things you have to do. You have to go by the headquarters of Walmart and realize it's nothing except an ugly brick building. That's step one. Step two is you have to go to Walmart number one and buy something. And step three, not in any particular order, is you have to go to the Walmart Visitor Center, which is where the little five and dime store was, where Walmart actually started, and tour the little museum that they have there and do that. And then your place is assured in Walmart heaven. So instead of doing that yesterday, which we had already done and assured our place in Walmart heaven, we went down to Crystal Bridges, which Crystal Bridges is a gorgeous art museum that was spearheaded by Sam Walton's only daughter, who, of course, is a billionaire, or would be a billionaire, I guess, if she hadn't given away a bunch of her money. One of the things she gave away her money to do was to build Crystal Bridges, which is, as I understand it, I don't know exactly what the history is. Suffice it to say, there is a gorgeous art museum tucked down in the hills and valleys of Bentonville, Arkansas, that rivals museums that you would see in major cities. So it's a bit amusing from that aspect, but it was fun. Net and I went down there and kicked around for several hours, and they have lots of trails, and you can, of course, beautiful artwork, and you can take pictures of everything, just no flash photography, they say, but you can take whatever pictures you want of whatever. So that's kind of cool. And all the staff there is very helpful. It's free to get in. They do have one paid exhibit area, but one day a week that's free. It's usually free on Wednesdays. We were there on Thursday, and I guess because of Christmas they were closed on Wednesday, that was free on Thursday. And since they were sort of celebrating Andy Warhol, because they had a few of his things there, they were actually giving away free bottles of Coke as well. So it was fun. It was fun. I need to kind of... There is supposedly a loop, a historic loop here, that I'm going to try to travel. Ah, here it is. Historic loop. I'm in the right place. But I'm not sure if the historic loop goes that way or this way. This is going to be a little bit of an adventure because I don't know where I am down in Eureka Springs. Thankfully, I have GPS. Anyway, so it is Friday morning. I forget what episode number this is. Just a second. It's 248. No, that can't be right. 248. Maybe 248. And my wife and I are doing a little vacation, and she likes to, you know, have a very relaxed morning, and so I wanted to go out and take some pictures. I've got my new camera along, and I've been taking pictures as we go of anything that strikes me as interesting and a possibility for something that I might cut out and put on a cover, bearing in mind copyright clearances and all that kind of good stuff. So I've been doing that, and did that this morning a little bit, and then had a little extra time here because checkout is not until 11 and it's 9:45 now. So I thought, well, I'll just go ahead and do the podcast. There's a very interesting little statue but I'm not going to get out and take a picture of it now. So, anyway, so all is well. It's been a great vacation. Had lots of fun. Been very relaxing. Got to do another tutorial, I think. I'm up to 8 tutorials completed at this point, and so I have 2 more to go. And then I'm going to get started on Windfall, book 1, and we'll just see how this all goes. I've kind of got a rough skeleton of where I'm going, and I was going to try to really flesh it out as I've tried to do in the past. And, you know, it seems like every time I've tried to really flesh stuff like that out in the past, that eventually I just give up and say, oh, let's just start writing it. Because there's the creative process is just one of those things that you just got to get in there and do it. And then something happens in that mix. So I think I'm just going to get started. And I just don't know who dies when yet. But I do know that lots of people die at different places. And so this is going to be interesting. I don't know. This is kind of an adventure, you know. So we'll see. And the covers, of course, are going to be an adventure. I'm trying to figure out how to do the covers such that I have the maximum amount of space for a picture, but yet I still get the title of the book and all that sort of thing on there. I'm still deciding on that. And I've just got to look at a bunch of work that other people have done. You know, there's the old saying, amateurs imitate, professionals steal. I just got to look at a bunch of stuff that other people have done and just see what the potentials are for how to put these covers together. There's a standard way of doing it, obviously, with just the title up at the top and the name at the bottom of the author. But, you know, I have done some things that are a little different in the past, and I don't know, we'll see. Anyways, not really sure how long this historic loop is going to take me to go around Eureka Springs, historic loop that way. I'm just passing the Crescent Park Hotel and Spa at the moment, and spotted a sign for a historic loop down this way. Eureka Springs is built right into the hillsides, a bunch of fairly large hills, and so not going to call them mountains because they're definitely not mountains, but so because of that, the roads are very twisty, very windy, and when I was exploring around, I just took one road, and that thing, it was more than a 45-degree angle going up that. I was just going, and I'm driving my wife's minivan. I'm just thinking, oh, please, 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 little minivan. Do it, do it, do it. But it was fine. Everything was fine. So if you hear crunching of gravel and that sort of thing, that's because I'm going down these little mountain-paved roads, but there's gravel and stuff on the sides, and they're narrow, and so it's very interesting. Anyways, and passing many, many quaint little houses and business places, and I'm coming up on a log home now that's head of the Eureka Springs Parks and Recreation Department. And so lots of fun stuff. Lots of fun stuff to see. Lots of atmosphere. Anyways, this week, since I don't really know how long this is going to take me to make this historic loop, I thought I would talk about a TED Talk that I had watched that was very interesting and, in fact, may impact how I go about telling the stories of Windfall. I had sort of nudged up against this idea, and I had planned to use it sort of from a different angle in Windfall. Part of the development of Windfall, part of the stuff that I want to explore different themes on in Windfall is this idea of the curse. And what actually happened in the curse? What did we lose? Because according to Genesis, you've got Adam and Eve, and they're in the garden. They disobey, and a curse is pronounced upon them. And part of that curse is toil. Part of that curse is that a woman is going to experience pain in childbirth. Part of that curse is that man will now have to toil. And that idea of toil is very interesting to me. I'm stopping because we're on a narrow street, and there's some people that are parked on one side of the street, and there's a car coming, and it'd be easier if I just stop. Toil is a very interesting idea, and specifically man's reaction to toil. But after listening to this TED Talk, there's actually a kind of more profound and fundamental level that I think I can address in Windfall, and it has to do with the introduction of death into the creation. Because there is indication in the story of Adam and Eve that there is a tree of life in Eden as well, and this tree of life would give mankind the ability to live forever. Now, you know, before somebody says, well, that's ridiculous, and in fact, physical processes can regenerate, and, you know, this physical body that we have, let's see, historic loop. It's probably this way. This physical process that we have, scientists have been able, at this point, to really discover that there's no reason that our bodies couldn't go ahead and keep regenerating themselves, and that we couldn't just keep on living. Provided the appropriate amount of intake of energy and, you know, the right settings, and et cetera, et cetera. So larger, from a larger perspective, it is possible that the introduction of toil and the introduction of the curse really also introduced the idea of physical death. And if so, then this talk that was done could also apply and could be used in some of the themes that I want to address in Windfall, and I may go after it that way. What I was originally going to do was to address it from the idea of toil and the mechanisms that we use to overcome toil, and the mechanisms that we use to spread our influence. And I was going to have the different people groups... So which way am I supposed to go here? I'm going to assume... What are we doing? I'm going to assume that I'm supposed to go this way because this looks like the bigger road. We'll see. Oh, it's a one-way street up here. Maybe this is not the right way to go. I may just have to kind of pull off to the side here and finish this podcast and then figure out where I am later. Let's go down here. Sure, why not? Anyway, so what I had originally planned to do was to just introduce this idea of the different ways that man responds to the curse, to toil, the way man shakes his fist and says, I'm not going to be subject to that. I'm going to make myself stronger. I'm going to make myself faster. I'm going to make myself smarter. You know, I am going to be the master of my own destiny. And so that was going to give me a backbone where I could go through easily then and just lay down different communities that my heroes could encounter. And, you know, I could weave my story through those communities, but still have some reason that each community was introduced. Anyways, I'm rambling a little bit because this is requiring far more concentration than it normally does because I don't know where I'm going. Although this is the Basin Park Hotel, so I know where that is. Anyway, so that was kind of the idea. And then I came across this idea of the name of the TED Talk was The Four Stories. Let's see. We tell ourselves about death. And it was pretty interesting. It was pretty, pretty interesting. The name of the speaker was Stephen Cave. And he started his talk by talking about the moment that when each of us realized we were going to die. And he said he can still remember that. So it made an impression on him. I will tell you frankly, I can't remember when that was. And it may have to do with the stories that were told about death in my household. You know, death was not that big of a deal, and so we didn't dwell on it. But in his household, he remembers when his grandfather died, and he began to think, okay, if that happened to my grandfather, is it going to happen to me? And then through that, he asked his parents, you know, okay, so what happens when they die? And as he put it, their explanation was really like the existential elevator just takes you up there somewhere. And he latched onto that explanation for a time, and he's confessed that in his life he's moved back and forth from not believing in that to believing in it. And he said even he has had a time as an adult when he had once again embraced this idea of an afterlife. But he is, I guess, at this point in his existence, really believing that that's just a bias. That in fact, these explanations that we tell ourselves about death are really nothing more than terror management, he called it, a terror management theory. That this idea that we're just going to cease to exist, that we're going to die, causes so much terror within us that we have to have some mechanism of dealing with it. And the mechanism that we go to is a bias, where we will just believe things about it so that we don't have to face the truth that we're all going to just wink out of existence at some point. That the worst calamity is going to happen to all of us. So that's sort of the basis of his talk. And I did find it interesting that he ties in not only religious thought, but science and technologies as well into this, which is what kind of got me thinking of, I could use that. And he did a really good job, I thought, of formalizing what are, in his mind, the four basic stories that we tell ourselves about death to try to ameliorate this terror that we feel about death. And so I'm actually back to the hotel. I have made the loop, but I'll just go through these real quick and then just add my own little observation on this. The first of the stories that we tell ourselves about death have to do with, I'm trying to remember exactly what he called it. I'm looking through my notes. Elixir. Elixir is really the first story. And what you have in Elixir is the idea that, no, you really don't have to have a physical death if you can just find the right magic potion that you can then live forever. And he said, you look through culture after culture after culture, and this idea of a fountain of youth comes up in culture after culture after culture. And in addition to that, you now look through a lot of the scientific endeavors that are out there that have to do with extending life. And from a technological scientific viewpoint, you have this story that we tell ourselves about death as well. You know, that we have nanotechnology that can rebuild our cells. We can figure out how to repair the telomerane that's at the end. Telomerane? Whatever it's called. It's the ends of our DNA that starts to become frayed, which people think that are one of the main reasons that our DNA starts replicating badly and we die. This idea that science can somehow prolong and stop death, that's the first story that we use to manage the terror of death, the elixir. The second one says, okay, we may die a physical death, but then we can come back. And he said, this is the story that you see in the case of Jesus, that Jesus died, but then he rose from the dead. It is the story of resurrection. And from a scientific standpoint, this is where cryonics comes in. So yeah, I may die, but I'm going to be frozen. And then at some point in the future, the science is going to get advanced enough. They can bring me back, repair all the problems, and then I can live forever. The third story that we tell ourselves, according to him, about death is that the physical body in this story is really too messy to live forever, and we acknowledge that. And so instead of hoping for the continual existence of our physical body, we then transition to something else, that we have this soul within us that then is transferred to something else. The Christian story has this in it as well. But interestingly enough, science and technology also has this in it as well. And the idea in science and technology is that we reach the singularity, we reach the point where we have computers that are as powerful as the human brain. And so then what we do is we transfer our consciousness into these machines. The fourth story, he said, that we tell ourselves about death is the idea of legacy. That, okay, look, you're going to die. There's nothing you can do about it. You're going to be dead. I was just thinking about what Woody Allen said about this, the quote that he has, and I'll get to that in a second. There's nothing you can do about that. You're going to die. But the work that you do here on Earth, you can leave a legacy. You can affect people. You can cause people to remember you fondly. And in doing that, that's a kind of life that you can continue with even after death. He said of that, I thought it was cute, he said of that, that Woody Allen, for example, said, I don't want to live on in the hearts of my countrymen. I want to live on in my apartment. Anyways, so from this then, the speaker went on to decide in his own bias that once you look at all these different stories and see how they reoccur through societies in so many different versions, and once you see how science and technology is also trying to embrace these ideas, to quote him, he says, and the fact that they reoccur in this way in such a similar form but in such different belief systems suggests, I think, that we should be skeptical of the truth of any particular version of these stories. Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's fine. I don't think that's necessarily the conclusion that you come to. If there's a bunch of different interpretations of a given event, all of them must be false. I don't know how you quite get there, but you get there if you have a bias towards the idea that we really just need to face the fact we're going to die and that's it and there's nothing else, which of course is an atheistic humanistic viewpoint, which he appears to have. So he was trying to figure out, okay, So now what do we do? How do we blunt the impact of this terror that we have of death and its effect on us and causing us to believe things we don't need to believe? And at this point, I'm pretty much in agreement with him there, because there is a recognition that the terror of death is something that needs to be dealt with. His mechanisms for dealing with it is to try to just realize that death is natural, but it's not rational, that there's always going to be a fear associated with that. And we just need to accept the fact that we're going to die and just sort of drill into us that we don't have to be afraid of it. He quoted a Greek philosopher who said, "Death is nothing to us because when we are here, death is not. And when death is here, we are gone." And the speaker admitted, he said, this is often quoted, he said, but it's pretty difficult to really grasp and to internalize because the idea of being gone is so difficult to imagine. He said another philosopher, Ludwig Wittgenstein, put it like this: death is not an event in life. We do not live to experience death. And so, he added, in this sense, life has no end. Now then, so what is the model that this speaker comes to try to deal with death? Well, the model that he comes to is the idea of a book, that a book has a beginning and end, that it's bounded by its covers, and that the characters within these books do not fear the end of the books. They don't know what happens after the end of the books. The books simply end, but they do not fear it. They simply live their life, and they live a story within. And from that, Stephen Cave then concludes, it makes no sense for you to fear what is outside those covers, whether before your birth or after your death, and you needn't worry about how long the book is or whether it's a comic strip or an epic. The only thing that matters is that you make it a good story. Okay, that's fine. And that's certainly one viewpoint. But as I was listening to all of this, I was thinking, yeah, but, you know, there's a kind of a different way to look at this. And I think one of the reasons that I've never been too concerned about death, in my lifetime, is because I grew up in a home where I watched the influence of the supernatural, and I watched the success of the supernatural occur pretty much on a daily basis. And so when my parents told me that we're here for only a short amount of time, that we can accomplish things here, and that what's going to happen from there is that we are going to live in eternity with God, that story did blunt the terror of death and took away that terror of death. But in addition to that, you can say, well, that's just a bias, and so you're believing in things that you don't need to believe in. But in addition to that, that belief set, I also saw all along the way how that could be very successful in this life. And I have said in the past that even if I wink out of existence at the end of my life and I'm never known again, the fact is I won't realize that I have winked out of existence. And what I have gained by following a path of believing in a God who is personal, who loves me, who wants to be involved in my life, who is involved in my life, gains me such confidence, gains me such bravery, and such willingness to embrace epics in my lives, gains me the understanding of not doing things that are simply destructive. I have gained so much from this idea in this story of the personal God who is involved in my life, that it doesn't really matter what happens when I die, because what I am gaining right now is worth it. So within that context, then, in looking at this idea of death, I come at it from a slightly different perspective. And the perspective I come at it from is, what is the cause of fear? What is the perpetrator of fear? And since I'm a guy with a hammer, and one hammer, flesh and spirit, and I just pound it into everything, fear always comes from the flesh. And the way I interpret the fear of death, then, is simply a lie that my flesh tells me. My flesh tells me a lie that I should fear death, when in fact there is nothing to fear. And that I don't have to live my life under the shadow of the anxiety of what's going to happen when I breathe my last on this earth. That's not to say that if I'm driving along and a car cuts right in front of me, that all those automatic systems aren't going to kick in to keep my car from crashing into someone else and getting killed. But I would hope that if I was on an airplane and it suddenly lost pressure and it obviously was going to crash, and there was the 1 minute descent or the 2 minute descent, however long that happened, that I would not be screaming in terror all the way down, that I would be calm, that I would turn to my wife if she was with me and thank her for the good life that we've had together. And then I would thank my God for the good life that He has provided for me. And then I would simply wait for the impact, knowing that one of two things was going to happen. Either I was going to wink out of existence, and I will have had a good, full life because I lived it without a fear of death, or I was going to wake up in His presence and continue on. And personally, I kind of like that approach better than I like the approach of just kind of gritting your teeth and trying to convince yourself that, you know, you should just live a good story. Although that idea of focusing on the present, living your best moment now, trying to make the best decisions you can, I am all for that idea. I just happen to like my version of it a little better, and that is that there is nothing to fear, including the fear of death. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it back to the hotel, which is my home for the moment.